Hello. It's DCG Emulsions. That's what I do. It's okay. It's okay. So first, I'd like to really thank TJ for initiating this whole thing a few years ago and as it's progressed, and Seth for the numerous hours he spent putting this together. So what I'd like to do is just start with a short DVD of some of my older work so you come familiar with what I've been doing for about the last 8 to 10 years.
Physical dimensions of all work range in height from 18 to 28 inches and 18 to 22 inches in width. The resolve to work with light and to shape it has been an impelling force that has inspired my work for many years. The act of condensing light into its elemental architecture has become a focal point of each piece. The physicality of light and our presumed perceptions is contemplated as one enters the space of these works. As the viewer penetrates this space, the pupils widen, indicating an opening within our consciousness. We begin to feel with our eyes. An exploration of the spherical nature of light is investigated. These works focus on the texture and the tactile qualities within the context of spherical light. As one alters their viewing position, a tactile polychromatic expanse is brought into existence. Experiencing each piece with patience allows perception to realize itself within time. The realization of the elemental, the marrow of light, amplifies our perceptual range. The ability to capture and hold light is inherent to this work. Pure, transparent colors interfere with each other, revealing that color is not only a surface condition, but also a frequency perception. The quality of the light illuminating the works will dictate the character of each individual piece. These works are intrinsic light tracings, documenting the authentic passage of time. This series uses a system of design chaos, allowing natural phenomenon within the process to interface with spontaneous aberrations that influence the final result. These spontaneous aberrations are both accidental and intentional. In developing my craft, in essence, molding light with my hands, I've ascertained that light itself encompasses an emotional and compelling force. Light is the faithful archivist of time.
So it's great to present a paper at MIT in hand. To speak about the spherical quality of light, I first need to talk about three aspects of the holographic technique I utilize in the making of holograms. The completed holographic artwork I prefer to manifest are analog-sourced Deneshik holograms utilizing dichromated gelatin. In the vast majority of my work, no master holograms are used. One reason for this is a loss of dimensional data that occurs with each additional transfer step. The Deneshik setup with a reference angle of 30 to 45 degrees allows for the realization of holograms with more than 180 degrees of horizontal parallax and around 140 or more degrees of vertical parallax. The total open aperture configuration allows for the recording of reality in a way that no other holographic setup can accomplish. The use of dichromated gelatin as my holographic emulsion of choice is integral in the story. Dichromated gelatin emulsion records holograms on a molecular level. Electron microscope images of DCG show something that has the appearance of steel wool. Molecular strands of gelatin create a web of gelatin fibers. This structure enables DCG to record holograms with a higher diffraction efficiency and greater resolution than any other holographic emulsion. It is my understanding that holograms produced in this manner are the highest resolution manifestations by man in the recording of space-time. If any of you have a better idea, let me know about this, as that is where I want to go. It all began with this crystal clear memory. And let me go back just a moment. This becomes the story of spherical light. It all began with this crystal clear memory I treasure. I am seated in the conference center at Lake Forest College. Niels Umbramson is showing a short film about light in flight. The film documented a femtosecond parcel of light on its journey through the atmosphere and onward into the universe. As this parcel of light embodying a wavefront progressed, it produced a beautiful expanding arc across the sky. As I began to contemplate the information that was contained in that femtosecond parcel of light, as it progressed outward, carrying its record of time intertwined within it, this was that moment, that epiphany, when I began to see what truly interested me about holography. When I returned to my lab, I found myself not looking at the image of the object in the hologram, but how the light reconstructed by the hologram was interacting in space and time. Then, after making tens of thousands of holograms, literally, I made my first hologram true to my spirit. It was a Deneshik dichromated gelatin hologram of a flat white painted surface. The distance from the emulsion to the white surface was about 1/8 of an inch. I presumed that the resulting hologram wouldn't have a great deal of depth. So much for presumption. As I began to horizontally move around this broadband frequency response white reflection hologram, I began to see a dimensional quality at the edges of the parallax. I needed to see further into this edge of parallax. I proceeded to make a narrow band response hologram of the white surface I was using as my model. This hologram was a clear blue frequency response hologram. When looking into the outside parallax edges of this narrow band blue hologram, I was able to perceive a rudimentary spherical form receding into the volume of space that existed in back of the image plane. I thought this was a spherical I thought that this spherical form within the hologram might be caused by the diverging reference object beam I had used in making this hologram. Next, I used a collimated light in the setup and got, in essence, the same result. The spherical form within the hologram remained intact, unchanged in its character. Was this spherical form the edge of holographic reality turning in on itself, forming a spherical light memory? That was the question I posed to myself. There we go. I began to rotate the hologram off its reference angle, and the spherical form began to expand and realize itself within the hologram. It all began to make sense. The femtosecond arcing parcel of light, dimensionally expanding in all directions on its journey, enveloped in time, wrapped in upon itself, spherical in character, as it should be. All of my current works are individual, unique works. My intent is for each to accurately record a moment in time with the highest resolution possible. Next slide. So I'm going to go through a little bit of my newer work. This is a piece that's outside in California, and we're going to talk a little bit about the archival qualities of what I do. The dichromated gelatin emulsion is coated on a thick piece of a thick glass substrate The dichromated gelatin emulsion are coated on thick glass substrates, enhancing their archival qualities. DCG as an emulsion is very stable. All one has to do is seal the emulsion from moisture and not expose them to extreme heat. Unlike polyester, glass is thermally stable and non-hydroscopic. For the last 20 years, two of my holograms have been in Manaus, Brazil, in the middle of the rainforest. No moisture problems yet. In the Deniszuk setup, the stability relationship between the reference and the object beam is mechanically unified, next slide, by the force of gravity. Let's talk a little bit about this one first. So this piece is outside. It's in a metal frame. I've got black glass on the back of it, so I haven't had any problems at all with any sort of excessive heating. It's vertical, and it hasn't been a problem at this point in time. I've had a hologram outside in Santa Fe, horizontal on the dirt, for about 20 years. There's a slight little bit frequency shifting. It's still there. It's just shifted a little blue. That's from the heat. So, you know, if I did that in Phoenix, horizontal on the ground, probably wouldn't work. It wouldn't survive. But in Santa Fe, it's okay. So vertically, they'll last. Okay, in the Deniszuk setup, stability relationships between the reference and the object beam is mechanically unified by the force of gravity. No, wrong slide. It's the right slide. Let's go back to it. So go to the mask. So the way I do this, making these archivally stable, is that I use this optical epoxy that I've been working with for many years. And there's a lot of glass people who've utilized it, and it's great stuff. It does have a toxic quality to it in the first about 30 minutes of curing that you have to be very careful for. So if you're interested in knowing more about this, talk to me about it under one condition: if you promise me that you will use something like this when you utilize it. There's a guy on YouTube that demonstrates how to use the stuff, and he doesn't have rubber gloves on, no mask. I don't know what he's doing. You know, you got to be careful. Next slide. Okay, so let's go back. In the Deniszuk setup, the stability relationship between the reference and the object beam is mechanically unified by the force of gravity. There's no need for an isolation table. A card table will work just fine, as our departed friend Richard Rollison demonstrated at many previous conferences. Next slide. So here I am, drawn on a cardboard, on a whiteboard, at MIT, notice the pennant. There's nothing like fulfilling a bucket list item, I'll tell you. It feels great. Been looking forward to it for years. Next slide. Oh, let's go to this one. So this is basically the setup I use. So this is what I've got is I can use this little pointer probably. Where are you? Well, this is the table down here. This is the laser path coming in like this. And I come up about 23, 24 inches off the table. So, you know, if I'm doing something that's some sort of object and I want to have a black background behind it, what I do is I create a shadow that goes all the way back behind it. Makes it blacker than anything that you can do at this point. There may be one other possibility, which we'll get to a little later on. Okay, next slide. So this is basically a little map of my lab, just to give you an idea of how I do things. Here's the lasers right here. They're coming into this first. This is a 4x8 table, and this is sort of the launching point for most of the beams that I utilize. So what I do is I use four optics, in essence. I use a polarization rotator. I use a little gimbaled mirror, and I use a concave mirror that's up over here on a tree that we'll get to. I'll show you the tree a little later on. I don't collimate light at all. I haven't collimated light for years and years. So what happens is this tree right here can service all these little squares here, 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 and here. I can have setups. Actually, this one right here. This is the little test table that I'm able to do a test on to see if we have happy lasers. Because lasers, I use argon lasers, and I've got a 5-watt Verde that I use. And every laser has a character. And so you have to figure out when they are happy and when they are unhappy. And so I've got, you know, little graphs basically that say, you know, I turn this laser on, I let it warm up for 12 minutes, okay, it's good for 22 minutes. And then some, like with the Verde, I have to basically let it cool down again, turn it back on. That's the best way that laser works. So what I do, I basically have here's the rotator, the polarization rotator right there. And there's a little gimbaled mirror right there, and I shoot it up, and I illuminate all these different zones with uncollimated concave mirror reference and object beam. And, you know, there's a little trick I used to use when I was sort of concerned about there's a slight little texture from the concave mirrors. And so what I used to do is put a little string on the concave mirror with a little nut on the bottom of it, and I would just swing the string a little bit, and it would just slightly move the mirror, and it would just sort of average out all the little garbage that's you know, not even garbage, it's just a little texture that exists on that mirror, and so it acts like your spatial filter. So, but lately I'm sort of enjoying the texture on the mirror, and you know, a lot of my work, I feel that it really adds a tactile quality to have that component, that texture in the hologram. And, you know, it's not very strong, but it's strong enough so that it's more tactile. So, and then what I do is, here's another launching point on this table, and then I can launch up to these four spots that are here and here, 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 for these two tables. And this table right here is a 4x12, this is a 5x12, this is a 7x14, something like that. At one point in time, I put them all on Newport legs. Now they're on inner tubes. Much better. Get rid of the Newports, you know, and save some money. Let's see if that's it. Yep, that's it. Next. So this is the optic tree, which is in the corner there. All it is, it's basically a 5-gallon bucket filled with cement and about a three-quarter inch galvanized pipe sticking up. And then there's all sorts of little lab clamps and stuff on here. Some are just little bent over pieces of sheet metal that you can move the mirror around. The mirror's on a magnet, so you can adjust the position of it. And, you know, you set it up for that, you know, a certain laser setup. Because usually, like some of these mirrors, there's a clean spot. There's a sweet spot on the mirror that's pretty clean, and you can not have to worry about really getting any Newton rings or any sort of garbage in the reference, which you see a lot more when you see something like that. Okay, next slide. So these are the little boxes that I put. These are like on the larger table. So these are little not styrofoam, what's that, foam core. Foam core, half-inch foam core boxes that surround the setups, sort of helps to keep, you know, any sort of air movement down a little bit, helps to keep dust off of things. Because I'm doing things horizontal, so there's a tendency for dust to settle onto the plate. But what's interesting is, you know, I've had plates where I've left them there for 3 or 4 days sometimes after I put them in position, and a lot of dust is on them, and I shoot them with the emulsion up. It never shows up. The dust that settles on there doesn't seem to show up, and it's like, okay, great, you know. If there's something on the back of the glass, then it makes a hologram of a little piece of dust on the back of the glass, so I have to be very careful to really clean the pieces when I load the plates to really get all that dust off of it. Next. So this is just another view of that. Let's go on. Here are three of my favorite or unfavorite optical components. Spatial filter, wherever that is, right there, don't use it. This is a Fabry-Perot spectrum analyzer. I use it once a year. This is the feather. I use it every day. It's a black feather, basically because of the structure of the feather, it has air inside of it. So I can create shadows wherever I want. So if you've got a model that you have to shadow support or something like that, you put a feather on it that casts a shadow on it, and then during the exposure, the feather heats up and starts to move and it disappears. Great little trick. Okay, next. That's just a big collimating mirror. Go on. So this is the business part of the thing. This is stuff I used to do. If people aren't familiar, dichromated gelatin. Right now is the time to do it again. I'm not going to do it again. It's a good thing to do, dichromated gelatin. This works. This works. Makes money. You know, great. Next. This is sort of the next step. This was like a glass sculptural, glass gallery stuff. It works too. It's relatively simple. It can be done by a lot of different people. It works too. Next one. These are these optical glass sculptures I used to do. They're a real pain in the ass. You know, glass is just as bad as holography in terms of everything you have to do with it. You know, don't touch it. Next one. So this is just some work I'll go through real quick. Just continue. This is the last master I made about 5 or 6 years ago. This was a wedding present for Fred and Becky. Talk to me later about this master. I've got a little sample of what I did over there on the table. Next picture. Fred and Becky say hi. This is the dark room lighting condition that's in my lab, yellow light, so you can work in the light, basically. And just go through these next ones about 3 or 4 seconds apiece. This is new work. I can talk more about it later on if you want. This one makes people sick to their stomach for the most part. That's what I've heard from people, because it's just so much going on in it. This is the last slide. If anyone doesn't know what this says, this is not a pipe. One of my favorite paintings of all time. That's it. Any questions?
Much. Thank you very much for your presentation. You've always inspired me. It's some of the cleanest, most beautiful work I've ever seen for a long time. And you remind me of, looking at your lab, remind me of another quote I think Jeff Odner once said to me, and that is, if it costs more than $50, it's not good science.
Most of that lab is from auctions, Los Alamos, and Sandia. That's where I've got most of my equipment from. So, and I've got two holograms back here on the end. The end one is part of the spherical light series, so you can get an idea of what I'm talking about, because they don't really photograph that well.
So I know your 5-watt Verity costs more than $50, but do you really find you need that much power for your work? Or it would help. Do you find it useful to have that much power?
It would help. You know, do I have 30 seconds?
We're into it now.
That 4 years ago, I decided, oh, maybe I should get an 18-watt Verity to see what I can do with it. So I called up Coherent. They sent an 18-watt out to me, and I started working with it. And it was totally unstable. I mean, it was just there's just too much energy, too much going on in it, and I couldn't get a hologram out of it. You know, it only gave me about 3 times, you know, the light energy in the end, but I couldn't get a hologram out of it. It was a shorter exposure time than what I'm using the 5-watt for. I only run the 5-watt at 2.5 watt. 5-watt, it's a little unstable, so I got to knock it back to 2.5.
Okay.
Thank you.